First I was a Catholic girl, loved the mass, I watched the swirl of smoke from candles burning, while Mary looked up yearning. I got confirmed.
Hello and welcome to the Digital Free Thought Radio Hour on WOZO Radio 103.9 LP FM right here in Knoxville, Tennessee. We're recording this on Sunday morning, October 3rd, 2021. I'm Larry Rhodes, or Doubter 5. And as usual, we have our co-host Wombat on the line with us. Hello, Wombat.
I took a week of vacation, and now it's just going to be raining all week.
Probably. Rain has come. But, you know, that's good. Our guests today are George Brown II and a half from Brooklyn. How are you?
I'm good.
And Dread Pirate Higgs, all the way from Canada. Hello. Digital Free Thought Radio Hour is a talk radio show about atheism, free thought, rational thought, humanism and the sciences, and conversely, we'll also talk about religions, religious faiths, gods, holy books, and superstition. Wombat, what are we going to be talking about today?
So I wanted to talk about the wonderful joys of going out into fields and picking cherries. And I thought, oh, we also have an atheist podcast, so let's do that as well. We'll talk about cherry picking today. It's going to be a fun one. But before we go into the meat and potatoes of it, or the cherry, the stems and the pits, if you will, we'll throw it up to our own Dread Pirate Higgs for our own weekly vacation.
Vacation?
Invocation.
Oh, our noodly Lord, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the noodle to know the difference.
That's right.
Amen.
That's a new one. I like that one a lot.
Yeah, that's cool.
I like that one a lot. I really do. Dread, we're going to throw it up at you. How you been since last week, my friend?
Not too bad. It's been kind of slow. I've been playing lots of World of Warcraft, so kind of catching up on my tunes.
Tunes, is that music?
No, my T-O-O-N-S, my characters.
Okay. So very, very cool.
I got a bunch of them and getting to know this new guild I'm in and doing some raiding and all that kind of stuff. So you
already have a Twitch channel set up. Do you ever stream your playing as well?
I don't have a Twitch channel, no.
You should get a Twitch channel. I thought you live stream.
No.
Okay, so you're live
streaming. I just live stream on YouTube.
Ah, okay. Listen, you can live stream on YouTube playing games as well. Like, hey, if you want more people, like that's a pretty good audience right there. Something to consider. We can talk about that. I think it's kind of cool.
There you go.
Larry Rhodes.
Before I go, we have this, I don't know if I mentioned this before, but here in BC, we have an Adopt a Highway program. So we figured out how to, so there's a difference between groups and individuals. If you're a group, like an official group, you actually have to take out insurance as a group to do volunteer work for this Adopt a Highway program.
Wow.
So, yeah, I know. Right? and it's like $450 a year. Yeah. You know, when you're not making any money, I mean, it's kind of hard to justify spending that kind of coin on insurance to do volunteer work.
Yet if you're an individual, you don't have to pay for insurance.
Exactly. So what we've done, instead of doing it as the Church of the Flying Spaghetti Monster and crew, we just have a symbol of the Flying Spaghetti Monster, you know, this fella, and crew. So it's kind of like it could be Smith and Friends. So it qualifies under that sort of a low-level group, not an official group. So we got a two-kilometer stretch of highway just east of Grand Forks that is going to have a sign posted on it with that symbol. Mm-hmm.
And whole bit. Really?
So,
cool.
Yeah.
Very nice.
So interesting.
Here in Tennessee, Eastern Tennessee, Knoxville area, the rationalists of East Tennessee do that as well. They've had their sign vandalized a couple times, destroyed once, I think, but they keep at it.
So who pays for insurance on the sign?
Oh, it's a state sign. That's for the state. I just replaces it or cleans it.
Larry Rhodes, Doubter 5, how you been?
Oh, doing fine. I took my motorcycle out again this week. It's been so beautiful. I've taken it out 2-3 times. It's just really awesome.
It has been really, really nice. I hope this rain spit that we're getting right now goes away pretty soon. I'd like to be able to go and travel a little bit this week.
Sure.
I want to check out the local Nashville area, see new disc golf courses, just try some new food places. And if not, I don't care if I got to play in the rain. I'm out here to have some fun. I took the week off, so I'm just having some time to get my whole self focus, clean up some of the mess that's behind me that you can see, and enjoy some time with my cat. Yeah. George Brown, 2.5. How you been?
Well, not so good as of yesterday, because I decided to take a vacation from coffee, and you all know how devoted to good coffee I am. So yeah. Yesterday I didn't have any coffee, and man, was I a space cadet the whole day. It was just shot.
Are you having headaches? Just caffeine withdrawal can give you headaches.
I didn't have headaches. I just was a space case for the entire day. I couldn't get anything done. So today I'm back at it.
You're back at it? How fast did you wake back up?
What's that?
How fast did you wake back up?
I can't remember. I didn't. I just got up, you know. I slept very late. But the other thing I wanted to mention before we get going is we were talking last week about narcissistic personality disorder. And I just wanted to mention, if anybody is interested in finding out more about this, which I recommend very highly, I want to recommend again a woman named Ramani Durvasala.
Whoa, you're going to have to spell that name.
You just have to look up, go on YouTube and look up Dr. Ramani. That's Ramani. And you can do the same thing on whatever search engine you have. She's an especially good, clear explainer of cluster B personality disorders. And a lot about the way these people affect the rest of us. She's wonderful at it. So again, Dr. Ramani, Ramani. And if you're of more of a religious persuasion, George Simon, both of these people are psychologists. They're coming at it from different angles.
I love it.
That's enough.
I love it. What? I can't wait to read through those reports and cherry pick the information that already lines up with my view on reality. Yeah. Speaking of which, I want to talk about the idea of cherry picking. And before we go into it, maybe we should talk about what we mean by cherry picking before we go into like a full on discussion about it. And so when I say cherry picking, we'll do a quick round table. But when I say cherry picking, I mean letting your confirmation bias drive you towards the information you want to pay attention to and the ones that you don't want to pay attention to. And so like you have a little filter that says, I have a established conclusion on something, and I'm only interested in the information that supports that conclusion, and anything else I will happily ignore. Dread Pirate, what do you think cherry picking is?
Yeah, pretty much the same thing. You know, especially if you're doing internet searches, you tend to end up going down rabbit holes if you're really, if you've really bought into an idea or a conclusion that you've come to. You tend to confirm that with the searches that you do and leave out the disconfirming information. Right. So,
and Google, why is my girlfriend so mean? Yeah, Google, that in. It's going to give you the only Google mean bubble. Results. Larry, sorry for
interrupting. The Google bubble can reinforce that as well. I mean, even without you thinking about it, it will show you stuff that it knows that you're interested in and not show you stuff that you're not.
Yep.
Yeah. And the scary thing is, it's not just Google. It's what news source you prefer to listen to. Right. It's what brands you prefer to buy from. It's, you know, it's what form of it, news or like radio, TV, whatever, like any way you choose to inform yourself.
Box, CNN.
Has a slant of bias to it. Yep. You got to be aware of that. You got to be aware of that.
Yep.
George Brown, the 2.5. How do you feel about cherry picking? Do you have a definition for it?
About cherry picking?
Yeah.
Oh, boy. I don't have an entry point on that, except, you know, I don't use Google as a search engine. There are alternatives. You don't have to use Google to do your search.
Well, I just meant any search engine that pays attention to what you search for and then offers you more of the same.
Well, Startpage does not, and DuckDuckGo does not. But you are free from surveillance on those search engines until you land on the page you're looking for, and that's a whole other story.
But on the topic,
how can you be sure? Are you just cherry picking that?
This is because of what they say about themselves.
But George, I want to hear what you think about cherry picking. What do you think it is?
What do I think it is? Well, it's like what people have said ahead of me. It's squeezing the facts through the filter of your own colander, you know.
Hey, I like
that. I like it. I like it.
I like and, that. And squeezing the facts out. And only filter the ones I care and about.
I have to confess that I think that we all do it. I think I do it, you know.
Of course, yeah. And so while we know we all do it, I think that's fact. I think it's two parts. One, we got to be aware that we do it. And two, we need to have an appreciation for a standard of evidence that's high enough to call us out when we do it ourselves and be willing, and maybe a third point, be willing to admit when we're not wrong and acquiesce towards the reality or comport towards reality, right? But here's an interesting example. I want to throw this out. In America, it's this really nice country. When I say America, I mean North America, United States of America, right? Even more specifically, United States, right? There's a government facility called the Pentagon, or an establishment called the Pentagon. And they hold documents sometimes for long periods of time to make sure that there's not public outcry on particular things. So when police write reports that people have seen something in the IR, Pentagon will be like, we're going to take this report and we're going to make it classified for a period of time, 20 years or so. And so what happened was a large batch of UFO sightings was finally released by the Pentagon. This was back in June, so it's actually not too recent, but we've had time to now be aware that the report was out because the Pentagon is going to make an announcement about stuff like that. And it's sort of like filtered through the internet. And people who are enthusiasts about UFOs and alien sightings and extraterrestrial life visiting Earth have used that report as fuel to say, aha, the government was hiding something. Here's the proof of it that confirms that everything we've been saying about aliens is absolutely true. However, the reports themselves... Oh, go ahead, Larry.
Go ahead. I wanted you to finish that thought.
Sure. Okay. But the reports themselves, and which we all have access to, and we can even provide a link in the comment descriptions, even from the title itself, basically says, yeah, it's mostly just people seeing lights in the air. There's no conclusive information among all these reports. It's still a very nebulous topic. We're not saying no. We're not saying yes. It's just people saying they saw some lights and they couldn't identify them. The end. Larry.
Well, people don't realize that there are more than one definition for a word, you know, like faith or something. But certain people will read that report, and every single time they see the word UFO or the initials, they'll think aliens. And it's not aliens. It's unidentified flying objects. It could be anything from a weather balloon to a weather phenomenon or reflected light. It could be.
But it could be aliens.
Could be. That's one of the options, but it doesn't necessarily mean it. And it's specifically in the military. When they say UFO, they're not talking aliens per se. They mean what it says, unidentified flying objects.
Sure. Dread?
I got the Northern Lights. So I see lights in the sky all the time.
Yeah. Nice. For the radio they also audience, call... he has Christmas lights over his
That's
head.
Right. Yeah. I guess that's important to point out. Uh-huh. They also call them UAPs, unknown aerial phenomenon.
Mm-hmm. Huh.
They've got that alternate name.
I hadn't heard that.
Well, because it's not necessary, because flying object is a misnomer in the sense that unknown aerial phenomena. Yeah. So it could be like other things other than flying.
Really fly as much as float.
Yeah. Dredd, that's a very good point. I didn't know about that distinction.
Well, you think about Venus. Venus has been misidentified throughout, you know, all known time, essentially, as
at least something. Since 1945.
Yeah. There you go.
Cool. George, you wanted to make a comment?
Yeah, we have a senator here in the United States, Joe Manchin. I think he's an unidentified flying object.
Okay. That's a great picture, although, Larry.
Although in Yiddish, there's a wonderful term in Yiddish. It's Luftmensch, which means airman.
You know? Airman. Okay. Yeah. Nice. Thanks for sharing that.
Yeah.
I've gone jogging before, and I have looked up into the air, and I have seen like a ring of lights in a blue sky. Like, I've seen things that I would qualify as like an unidentified aerial phenomenon, and I would look at that thing, and like my skeptical brain is like, Tyrone, that's not a UFO, but I still don't know what it is, and it's probably just so bright outside that I can't see an outline of something, but it is like a static ring of lights in the air, and I'm like, what the hell could that be? And my brain just goes like, I really UFO. Would like to know yeah. what it is. But aliens. Until then, I'm happy for it not being, I won't jump to the conclusion of aliens, but I'm just like, it's so interesting that I could easily do that, and yet we're all seeing the same thing, and I can see the mania sort of leap towards it. But in terms of cherry picking, I could definitely say that if I wanted to believe in aliens, I could use that as an excuse and then go on Google and be like, I found ring of lights, aliens. And then Google's like, oh, he put these words together. Just show him alien stuff and ring of lights, and then throw in some dog food commercials because we need to sell some dog food. Same thing too. And that's how, in my head, people fall into like deeper and deeper circles, because they'll start connecting with other people who also believe that rings of lights in the air are aliens, and maybe they all have a shared love of dog food. Next thing you know, they're at a convention and more money keeps going around. Dredd, what do you think?
You know, sometimes that cherry picking too is combined with, you know, the incredulity, you know, argument from incredulity.
Yes.
How could it be an area, you know, how could it be Venus? I mean, it was moving too fast. It's too bright. You know, it's blah, blah, blah. You know,
there's no way I could be wrong, or how you have to prove that I'm wrong before I'm even willing to consider any other options. It's just like, that's the worst place to be in. The default option is not you are right. Mm-hmm. The default option is you should keep working harder to figure out why you are right. Not I'm right until I'm proven wrong. It's like, why are you right? George, thoughts?
Well, following up on what Dredd Pirate just said, I go out walking sometimes at night, and it's like I was looking up in the sky and saw this small constellation, and I thought, what's that? Well, it when I look with my right eye, it's one star. I've got internal reflections in my left eye. You know, I'm an old guy. I mean, stuff happens when you're old. You know, it was my left eye. It's a constellation, and it's really cool. You know, too bad it's not real.
So in the event of me not worrying about this any longer, I actually did look it up on Google to figure out what the ring of lights was, but I didn't put alien or anything behind it. And it turns out there's a novel community of people who send up weather balloons up into the air, and the weather balloons are ribbed, and they have sort of like a iridescent surface on the outside, such that each rib has a little reflection of light if there's sun out on a clear day. And I said I saw this ring of light on a clear day. I had no idea what it was. It's a weather balloon that went up into the air, and each of those little ribs have a tiny little sparkle sunspot on them. And I can't see the outline of the balloon because it's too far away, but I can see the bright circle of lights.
Right.
And like, there it is. That's what I saw. But cool. I had to look it up unbiasedly to figure that out. And whether or not I'm right, maybe it was an alien in a really spacey suit or something like that. But like
Occam's razor.
Let's see. Is my following Occam's razor? Yeah, the least number of assumptions makes more valid argument most of the time. Let's see. I would say, yeah, that's fair. I would say, like, I'm not assuming aliens have to exist. We already know weather balloons do exist. I find like that's the most simplest and least assumptive approach. So yeah. I would also say, what is it? Extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence, right? And so mundane claims only require mundane evidence. And we already know weather balloons exist. Sunlight exists. Yeah. You can put these two together, and I can make a better argument for it being just a weather balloon on a sunny day than I could be for an alien force visiting us from another galaxy, right?
Yeah.
I love stuff like that. Let's see. Larry, you want to talk about that picture in the background that you got? Oh, my buddy. There you go.
Okay, there it is. Nice. Yeah, it's a picture from 1943, I think, during World War II, when a UFO was reported off the West Coast, California, specifically near Los Angeles. And it showed up. We've spotted it. We've shown lights on it, spotlights like we would if it was an air raid. We shelled it with artillery and followed it for an hour and a half, 2 hours down the coast, never hurting it at all. And finally, it just flew away. I mean, if you've got a minute to, and you're interested in this kind of stuff, do a search for the Battle of Los Angeles. And I think it was 1943. But it makes for good reading anyway.
So there is something to be said about pressure to come to a conclusion, right? Like if you're in the middle of a wartime and you may need to use cherry picking as a survival mechanism. I'm not saying cherry picking. So here's my hot take. Cherry picking isn't always bad. And there seems to exist almost out of evolutionary. Yeah. Out of like a natural need to quickly come to a conclusion that can help to save you if there's a threat and help you understand the environment that you're in. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't necessarily mean it's the most accurate way to come to a conclusion.
No.
Go ahead.
I was going to say that reminds me of Daniel Kahneman's research on Thinking Fast and Slow. He wrote a book about that.
Yeah.
And there's the style A and style B of thinking, the style A being arriving at quick conclusions about your environment in order to, you know, save yourself from, I mean, if you hear a rustle in the trees or in the grasses, assume it's a tiger, because if you assume it's the wind, well, guess what? You're less likely. That's
toast.
Less likely to survive that one if it is a tiger. So
absolutely true. Yeah. George.
What do any of us ever search on Google and click that button that says I'm feeling lucky?
Yes, sometimes
occasionally I will.
Now, sometimes happens, I do it.
I've never gotten lucky.
what happens when you do that?
It sends you to the very top search. It sends you to the very top search. It sends you automatically to the very, very top search. It is a funny button, but I haven't clicked it in years, but I have clicked that button a couple of times. But I would also say on Dread Pirate's note, so you have this idea where you have slow thinking, which is what we're getting good at now as a society. Like we're being rational, we're being empathetic, we're being progressive with our, you know, approach to a lot of problems and being more sensitive to a lot of things. And it takes a lot of consideration. It's way more complicated, but we tend to come out to conclusions that help a great proportion of society, right? Mm-hmm. But then we also have this fast thinking, which is really, really good in terms of like, okay, we just got to stay alive. Who cares what needs to be damaged or what needs to be killed? It's whatever's the most useful thing, just move forward.
Yeah.
Maybe not the best way to control society, but maybe good on an individualistic basis to at least, you know, maintain life for a period of time. I just wanted to make one last thing. The evolution of it seems to be that we've had that quick thinking pathway a lot longer than the slower pathway thinking.
Absolutely. And
because of that, it's still very persuasive to us to do things in the quick thinking fashion, including cherry picking.
Mm-hmm. Well, it informs the flight or fight response too.
Yep.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
If you've got, you know, if your environment dictates that you have to think quick, you're going to be looking out for yourself and making decisions based on not reflection. And long considered thought of the facts and evidence and all the rest. You're just going to go with what you think is absolutely going to save your skin.
And so this is why I like escape rooms. I don't know if you ever played an escape room game before.
I've heard of them.
Okay. They have some in Tennessee as well, but essentially you and a group of friends and maybe some strangers who will join your group or a different group of friends will team up and be blindfolded and be brought to a room where there are puzzles. But the theme of the room is like, hey, you're going to die in a half hour if you don't figure out the main puzzle to solve in this room. And they take the blindfolds off and you're like in some weird dungeon or like a medical area or like some museum.
It's like Saw?
Art house. it's a lot like Saw, but sometimes it's classy. Sometimes like Casino Royale, and you're like, okay. Oh, wow, everyone's like, you know, there's like roulette tables here, but they all have like weird pictograms on them, and you have to figure out, where's the pattern? What are we trying to figure out here? And you are pressured to figure out something as soon as possible, and there are obvious threats all around you in the sense of there's timers on the wall. There's an announcer saying, you got 5 minutes left. I cut fingers off, and I'm going to come after you if you don't solve this in time. Your blood is, you know, highly pressurized. You're freaking out, but you have to think slowly and calmly to deduce all of these problems.
You have to communicate
with the people. We didn't pass either, don't worry. But you have to communicate with the people in your team so that everyone can split up properly and start solving their areas in the room. And you have to like work together and be like, I solved this. Does anyone have a key? Because I need a key, because I just opened it up and there's a key here. It's like, I have a key. I have a red key and a green key. It's like, I have a key too. I have a blue key. It's like, I need the green key. It's like, okay, everybody come together. We'll figure out where everything goes. It's so fun because your brain is like, fight, flight, run or fight. And the other side is like, we have to figure out how many cities there are in Italy. And it just keeps, hey, what's up, Dredd? What's up?
Well, I was going to say, that's kind of like firefighting too. The number one cause of panic is not having a plan. Mm-hmm. And that's why, you know, firefighters constantly are rehearsing and practicing their techniques and whatnot. So that when it comes to a situation where you're in, you know, faced a burning building and you're going to have to do an interior search, you remain calm because you have a plan and you've practiced it. And a lot of it then becomes sort of muscle memory and all that sort of thing. So that keeps your panic button in your back pocket, so to speak.
I love it.
Yeah.
The number one cause of panic is not having a plan. And I feel like that is the number one way to probably stop cherry picking. If you just plan out your means of understanding information or your epistemology ahead of time, and then you'll have a much better way.
Certainly, like establishing a standard of evidence. If you don't have a standard and you're just willy-nilly, well, then you'll take anything that comes. But if you firmly establish in your own mind that you subject evidence to a certain amount of rigor, then you can at least have a reliable method for determining what's true and what's not true.
I love it. I love it. Larry, I think we're at the bottom of the half.
About time, isn't it? This is the Digital Free Thought Radio Hour at WOZO Radio, 103.9 LPFM here in Knoxville, Tennessee. And we'll be right back after this short break.
Are you going to a dance?
No, Mom, it's just a movie date.
Oh. Your father and I have no objections to church or school-sponsored dances, but we surely don't want you going to any of those local places like that cuckoo club.
Everything will be all right.
don't go to God's house anymore.
To the second half of the Digital Freethought Radio Hour. I'm Doubter 5, and we're on WOZO Radio 103.9 LPFM here in Knoxville, Tennessee. Today is Sunday morning, October 3rd, and let's talk for a second about the Atheist Society of Knoxville. ASK was founded in 2002, and we're in our 19th year. ASK has over 1,000 members, and we have weekly Zoom meetings during COVID. But we are again meeting in person downtown Tuesday evenings at Barley's Tap Room Pizzeria in Knoxville's Old City out on the patio. So if it's Tuesday evening, you're off work, come on down and meet some other atheists. You can also find us online on Facebook, meetup.com, or knoxvilleatheist.org. Just look for Atheist Society of Knoxville. Just that simple. By the way, if you don't live in Knoxville, you should still go to Meetup and do a search for an atheist group in your town. Don't find one?
Start one.
Right. Where do we want to pick up, Wombat?
Hey, we're finishing up our talk on cherry picking today, and I wanted to bring up a new side topic. Boudreau sent us an article, well, actually sent us a citation to a scientific art or scientific literature magazine journal, is what they're called. And what they do is this journal is in toxicology, and they issued a report by a guy who was anti-vax, basically anti-vaccination of children. And he said, hey, you know, most people who get vaccines are old, or I'm sorry, most people who get sick from COVID are old. Therefore, we shouldn't vaccinate children, because why would we even bother vaccinating children? Uh-huh. And the report didn't really talk anything about how kids can be vectors for diseases.
Right.
They instead, right. Or how, you know, a room full of kids could easily infect an adult teacher. But instead, it was more of just like, here are the numbers that agree with my conclusion. And I specifically selected the ones that match this narrative that I have. And what is the case to be discussed here is that in journals or in scientific journals, there are room for things called editorials, which are essentially opinion pieces. And those are subject to whether or not the editor of that journal would like to publish them or not. And they tend to be more provocative to inspire conversation or sell more journals at the end of the day. Whereas you also have areas for scholarly articles, reviews, and reports, which are peer reviewed by other scientists before they even get to the editor. And then that paper is a thoroughly investigated and thoroughly vested scientific article. And the scientifically weighed articles are not the same thing as the opinion pieces, yet they are published in the same journals. And the problem with that is that people will look through a journal to find a well-established journal to find the opinion piece that matches their kooky conclusion, and then point at science to say, and it's backed by science, when it's not. It's just an opinion piece that's in a scientific journal. And that's cherry picking. And I think it's kind of dangerous. George, you have thoughts on that? Take yourself off mute.
Well, I wanted to go back to something that Dread Pirate said at the end of the last half hour about firefighters. I like that. He said, you have to have a plan. And, you know, if you're going to come out alive from fighting the fire. And I thought, well, where do firefighters get that plan? And I realized they rehearse, they practice on stuff, you know? And one of the things that I notice when I go around from place to place is those little practice structures that firefighters use.
The little villages that they have that they can set fires and then practice putting them out.
Yeah. What are those structures called, Dread Pirate? Do you know?
Well, they're just fire grounds, you know, practice fire grounds.
Yeah.
We've got one. We set one up here in Grand Forks with a bunch of sea cans. And, you know, so we got sea cans stacked on each other. We have.
What's a sea can? What's a sea can?
A sea
can. I think we're a little off. I think we're getting a little off topic. I want to just make sure that we're focused right now on what you're picking in, and we can have this conversation later. So the main thing I'm just going to reintroduce the topic, which was, hey, in science, there are people who publish articles that some of them can be opinion pieces and some of them are not opinion pieces, but people will cherry pick from scholarly articles and then use that as a claim that science supports their misinterpreted conclusion. And that can be very, very dangerous on a number of fronts. George, would you like to talk about the topic?
Well, okay. Well, again, I want to finish what I was saying before, which is that perhaps we need, like the firefighters, work with practice, with these practice structures, that we need to practice free thought, free thinking, to try to catch ourselves in cherry picking in our own minds.
One of the things that I've seen online that, and I'm sure y'all have seen it too, is the outsider test of faith. That I think is a good example of that, to step out of your little cocoon of information. Consider your religion from the outside, like from another religious view or from an atheist view, and try to pick it apart. Try to find what's real, what's not real, what's evidential, what you can support from outside the religion before you just throw all of your faith toward that those answers and just accept them.
Yeah.
So what's that called again?
The OTF. The
outsider test of faith.
Dredd, did you want to make a comment?
No.
Okay. Dredd, I'm going to ask you a question.
Sure.
We both do Socratic examination on, and something I've maybe heard that you've maybe heard as well is someone saying science agrees with this conclusion that I have. That's clearly not scientific, right? It's like, well, science says there's no evolution. And when I ask, what do you mean by that? What they typically say is, well, there's a lot of scientists who agree that evolution doesn't actually exist.
Right.
And in my head, that's the idea of like, scientists are not the same thing as science.
Right. It's an argument from authority.
Right.
And it's an argument from authority. Where you cherry picked it to be.
Right. But they still want all the gravitas of saying science, but they don't want any of the actual conclusions from the process.
Yeah. Hey, you got to separate the method from the people who practice it, right?
Yeah. From the opinions and the people. Exactly. Correct.
What I like to say is that when religious scientists are doing science, they're not doing religion. And vice versa. When they're doing a religion, they're not doing science.
Unless you work for Ken Ham.
Still.
Even then, I would say it still doesn't count.
That's not science if they're doing it, you know, to...
That's the arts and crafts project that took them out of control.
Ken Ham, I'm lost.
It's okay. We don't got to talk about that guy. The less we know about him, the better. That's my fun. Google your own rabbit holes on that, dude. Mm-hmm. But I would also say this. I agree with what you said, Larry. I think we do have these things called religious sciences. And often, so way back when, the only way you could get funding to do science was by grouping up with the church, mm-hmm. who would fund your scientific right. endeavors, as long as it supported what right. the church wanted.
Right.
Right, Larry?
If it didn't, not only would they remove your funding if you had it in the first place, but they would destroy your works and sometimes destroy you.
Yeah. Yeah. And kill you at the same right. time, too, or imprison you.
Galileo is a perfect yeah. example of that.
And, oh, there's so Bruno, many great examples.
Yeah.
Punnett
was actually burned Darwin. At the stake.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like, there are so many great scientists back in the day who were essentially adjuncts of a church. It's the pioneers in science who went against what the church was purporting that gave us some of the greatest breakthroughs. And even those moments were such a struggle on yes. their part, because they're like, maybe Earth isn't the center of the universe. We're going to put you in jail for the rest of your life. Like, yeah, but I still feel like that's the way it is. Yeah. Put me in jail. I'm only going to live till I'm 40 anyways. Like, super way back when. I don't care. I'm like 37. It's all good. Don't worry about it. But I do feel like that is, I think we should, how do I put it? Honor the perseverance of people who help to pursue scientific interests and truth, and whether or not those people at large have opinions doesn't necessarily influence the process of science, which is combating ideas and opinions and seeing which floats to the top. And I feel like that's always the best pursuit. So when people point out like one article that agrees with them, I always like to see what are the other articles saying about that article, or like what are the citations in that article and how do people take those in the grand scheme of things. I would say science is not looking at one journal article and being like, ha, this agrees with my point, therefore it's true. It's a process where we have records and we investigate those records and we always ask questions and we never accept anything as absolutely true, but we're always willing to say, hey, does this meet the standard of evidence for the claim or not? Mm-hmm. And I think that's something we should always have. George, what's up?
Well, I was just thinking, we live in a democracy and you do too, Dread Pirate, in Canada. And I think that the success of a democracy, to me, depends on the ability of the participants in that democracy to think clearly. And so we think that we are the people who do the clear thinking. And I agree with myself, so there. But how do we convince the rest of the guys to come along with us? That's the question.
You've asked this question a number of times, but what's your answer that you have as the best answer?
I don't have an answer. I'm asking you guys.
I think the question is good enough as an answer. I think in my head, if you're asking people, how can you get to us? How can you come to a correct conclusion better? That is the question that you need to be asking, even if you're making statements or if you're questioning statements,
mm-hmm.
because that's how you get better right. at knowing true things from false things, is by questioning.
So I get you have to way of be able to care in the first place, I guess.
Yeah. And that's often a question that's asked of an interlocutor in Socratic examination, interlocutor being your interview partner, is, How do you arrive at your truth? You know, what is the method by which you examine the things that you use to support your beliefs?
And you know, the weirdest thing I have is, for me, I find, and this is going to be the part where everyone's going to cherry pick this clip for me and be like, aha, Tyrone doesn't care about the truth. But I find the truth to be overrated if it's nominal to what can be useful and understood within a particular model. So like in my head, if I can demonstrate something very well and I'm off by like 0.00001% and the truth is that 0.0001% away, I'm fine with not knowing the absolute truth. I'm totally happy with this model if it works. Mm-hmm. And a good example of that, Google Maps used to be like 2 years ago based on the flat Earth model, because you don't have to, you know, estimate the curvature of the Earth if you're just driving from here to McDonald's, right? It's just a straight road and it's 2.4 miles away. Maybe it's 2.47015 miles away, because if you include the curvature, it's a little longer. It's like, I don't care, dude. Just tell me 2.4 miles and how long it'll take for me to drive there. About 4 minutes? Fantastic. This model works and it's useful. It may not be the absolute truth. It may not be the absolute time that I arrive on time. Maybe there's traffic or whatever, but it works for me and it's at least usefulness mundane capacity. And what's the issue is when people have that low standard of for mundane things, and they apply it to incredibly extraordinary things like the existence of a God, or even take, in my head, two different standards and say, well, my extraordinary God has told me that it's not necessary for me to get vaccinated. And I'm like, oh, you've compounded a very low standard of evidence to a highly incredible statement, and are believing whatever this big statement tells you about mundane things. Like, you're caught in this really vicious loop that may actually lead to needless harm. Mm-hmm. And so what I wish for is this cherry picking that we do, to at least be acknowledged of the fact that, like, hey, for mundane things like Google Maps, that's okay, because I'm not really hurting anybody if I arrive at McDonald's 30 seconds later than I'm supposed to. But when it comes to interacting with other human beings, I want to have the highest standard of information possible. And so maybe I'll cherry pick less on that and be more comfortable with getting closer to the more absolute truth if I can be. Larry?
Yeah, what gets me is that the opposition would say, it was 99%, 99.3%, and then they took consideration. Well, they don't even tell you all this stuff, but now it's 99.9% after they take in whatever else. See, right? Science was wrong. They lied to you. So, you know, they it's either right or wrong. It's one or the other. Correct. It can't be both.
Dread.
I was just going to point out, too, I was listening actually to an episode of the Skeptic Guide to the Universe podcast. And they're a real great group for anyone who is looking for content. But, the point was made is that the theories of science are models of reality. Right, yes. They're not true depictions of what we think reality is. They're right. models, and that's why they can change over time. Right. As new evidence comes in and new information right. comes in.
Yeah. It's Darwin's theory is a good example, because exactly. he didn't have any knowledge of DNA, but he or gave germs. Us a good model that Correct. We could use going forward.
Exactly.
Yep. Hey, I'm going to throw this out too. It's going to touch on both of your points, but the idea of science being wrong. I've had conversations on my YouTube channel where people say, aha, they said this drug would work, but then they realized it didn't work. Science was wrong. Science was wrong. And I was like, in my head, that's not an example of science being wrong. That's an example of science getting something right. Because when science figures out something doesn't work, it's the first thing in the line to be like, hey, this doesn't work, right?
It's self-correcting. It has a self-correcting feature. Yeah. Yeah.
When something doesn't work in religion or faith, there's nothing. You're the problem.
Right.
And it's not a systemic model.
And you think about how slow the Pope has come to, you know, accepting responsibility on behalf of the church for some. I mean, think about Galileo, apologizing for Galileo.
Yeah.
Wasn't that like 10 years ago or something?
Yeah. Oh, my gosh, that's terrible. Larry, what's up?
Back when Edison was working on the light bulb, he'd worked on it for years and couldn't find the correct, element that wouldn't burn up. And the interviewer was saying, you haven't had anything but failure for the last year. He says, but I know 1,000 things that don't work. So he could move on from that. It was progress, even though he hadn't reached the right element.
Hey, what's up, Dredd?
Yeah, one of our viewers here, his name is Redonk, and he goes, absolute truth doesn't exist. Truth is a measure of confidence.
Truth is a measure of confidence. We'd have to touch on that. I have to think about that a little bit more.
That would explain why religion says they always have capital T truth. They have ultimate confidence in their religion.
Right.
Their
faith. Yeah, absolute confidence.
But Edison in his own right is an interesting figure, because I feel like, you know, it takes someone to try to make something to realize that when you hit a wall, it's not the end of the project, but rather a better resolution of how to make the project work. Mm-hmm. Like, you've hit a wall here. Now you know what to go around or what the next obstacle is in the process of making something. Yeah. And one of the cool things he had a problem with was he was trying to figure out, how do I make filaments burn longer for my incandescent lamps? Right. And there was another patent guy, a black dude named Lewis Howard Latimer, who made a longer lasting filament for stuff like that. And Edison's like, hey, I'll take whatever I can get. This guy, let me take your stuff. It's like, I got my patent. It's like, okay, fine, we'll buy your patent. I'm Thomas Edison. I'm rich as hell. I'm going to get your patent. And that was one of the tricks that, you know, collaboration and working with other scientists, figuring out, hey, what small area are you an expert in? Can we collaborate? And can we build a model so I can get over the walls of things that I don't know? And in my head, it's just that collaborative aspect of science that makes the best ideas float to the top. And it tends to be the case that great ideas don't happen in a vacuum, and like great inventions don't happen by just one person. Mm-hmm. It takes a team of people working together, questioning each other and trying to beat each other with the best information that lets the best things rise to the top. And I love that. Dredd first and then Larry.
Yeah. So anyway, Redonk clarifies his earlier statement, says, yes, science relies on being falsifiable and subject to scrutiny.
Yeah, that I agree. Yeah,
absolutely.
Larry?
Well, I was just going to say about the teams of scientists working together to find truth. Sometimes the teams of scientists aren't working together. That's how we found the cosmic background radiation. One team was working to find it, and they couldn't find it. And another team wasn't working to find it, but they found it, and they didn't know what it was. And they were fairly close together physically. And they contacted each other. One group did the other, and it fit the bill. We now know a whole lot more about the cosmic background.
And that's a beautiful story, because it does show that science is a objective tool that different parties can use to figure out the same thing, even if the intentions were completely different. They point to the same model of reality. It's such an accurate model that two different teams working in two different directions can arrive at the same conclusion, right? And you don't get that with religion, because we have the Third Street Baptist Church who disagrees with the Second Street Baptist Church, who says they got it all wrong.
Or even one of the parishioners doesn't think that the preacher's right, so he splits off and starts his own denomination.
George, what's up?
I was just thinking of the example of where I live. The two counties, there are two counties here. One is large, one is tiny. And there's a newspaper that serves both counties, and they have they list all the churches every Friday. And every once in a while I go and I read them and I count the churches. And so we have in these two counties, you know, talking about the Baptist spinoffs, Larry, we have 167 official Baptist churches. And then we have another 37 unofficial Baptist churches. And then we have the other ones that have split off completely from those. It's an incredible number of churches.
Yeah. It's all personal revelation. Bifurcation. It is. Yeah. And here's the thing, too. And I want to make sure this is a point before we end the show. Every single one of those people will call themselves Christian as if it was one thing uniformly across all those subsections within that denomination. And Catholics will call themselves Christians, Protestants call themselves Christians. And the thing is, I'm not letting that pass for me anymore as an answer. When someone tells me a Christian, I ask them which kind or what kind, epistological, methodological, Lutheran, Protestant, Catholic, evangelical, Adventist. Like, there's so many different kinds. I want to know what brand within this greater band that you think you are, because it's not one thing. And I find that by asking that question, it just helps them to realize, one, I'm not taking whatever you tell me as like as a grain of salt. Two, I'm aware that there's more versions than you're letting on. And three, where are you in this grand scheme of things? And oftentimes I get, well, I'm non-denominational. It's like, oh, welcome to I still don't
church
know anything
of one.
About what you
believe. Yeah, church of one.
I still don't know anything about what you believe or what you don't believe, but thank you for at least picking the one of the best denominations out there, the non-denominationals. Anyway, hey, I think we're getting close to the bottom of the half. George, bottom of the second
top
half.
Top of the
George,
top of the hour.
Top of the hour. Are you feeling good without your coffee buzz? Is it coming back to you?
Yeah. I'm feeling good. I still want to know how in the world am I going to give up coffee, because I like it so much.
Nice.
I'm hooked. I'm addicted, guys. Help me.
Yeah. It's a thing. It's one of the weird, in our culture, it's one of the weird acceptable psychotropics that people accept and sell to kids, and everyone thinks is normal, but there you go. Dredd Pirate, where can we find you at?
Well, I'm live streaming as we speak on my YouTube channel, Mind Pirate, which can be, it's MindPyrate. And I stream it at 8 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. So check it out. And I just got one more comment here from Redonk. He says, think a more accurate wording would be that absolute knowledge doesn't exist. It's like infinity, something you can approach but never reach. I thought that was pretty
good. As opposed to stupidity.
Indeed. That's great. Come check out my channel and please subscribe. I'm six viewers away or six subscribers away from.
Hey, I'll tell you how you do it. Start streaming some video games, and people will be like, "Oh, he plays Fortnite too." Next thing you know, all the 14-year-olds are jumping.
Yeah, I could name it Ultimate Fails. Don't stand in fire.
That's great. She said what? There you go. Right. I'm Let's Chat on YouTube. Whatever you got to do to make the algorithm work for you, and we'll be here next week. Larry, why don't you take us out?
Hey, remember, this show is on Apple iTunes, Pocket Cast, Amazon, and podcasts everywhere. Just search for Digital Free Thought Radio Hour.
I love that.
My content is on digitalfreethought.com. Be sure to click on the blog button for our radio show archives, atheist songs, and many articles on the subject. I have a book. It's called Atheism, What's It All About? And it's available on Amazon. You can find my YouTube channel simply by searching for Larry Rhodes or Doubter 5. If you have any questions for the show, you can send them to askanatheist@knoxvilleatheist.org. If you're watching this on YouTube, be sure to like and subscribe. This has been the Digital Free Thought Radio Hour. Remember that everybody is going to somebody else's hell. The time to worry about it when they prove that heavens and hells and souls are real. Until then, don't sweat it. Enjoy your life. We'll see you next week. Say bye, everybody.
Bye, everybody.